And then my staff will make sure she knows exactly who's online, and we'll welcome anybody on. We'll welcome people in the room first, and then we'll get to the people online, okay? And we may just have to go around. Do you have everything, Crystal? Do you have who's online? Okay. All right. So basically, I'm going to go ahead and open the meeting today. This is the meeting of the Administrative Regulatory Review Committee, and we are going to come to order at 8.05 a.m. at the Eagle River Town Center. Today is Wednesday, June 18th. The members present right now are Representative Carr and myself, Chair Reingold. We also have our Representative Gaddis here, and also joining us, I believe the teleconference is online, is Representative Hawker's office. We also have staff from Senator Giesel's office and Representative Costello's office. So with that, I'm going to ask everyone to turn off their phones because it's already challenging just having this one phone and not actually have video teleconferencing here, so that definitely helps. And today we will be hearing public testimony from teachers across the state regarding the teacher evaluation regulation adopted by the State Board of Education in December 2012. There was overwhelming concern in public testimony surrounding these regulations. Over 800 public comments were received by the Department of Education during the public comment period. The majority of these were against the adoption of these regulations. The main concerns were confidentiality section, student data collection, and the evaluation of students' growth and performance. During the board meeting on December 6th and 7th, 2012, the board adopted one amendment to the regulation that changed the evaluation of students' growth and performance from a base of 20% in fiscal year 2015 to 2017, 36% to 2017 and 18, and 50% 2018 and 19. This means that by 2018, 50% of a teacher's evaluation will be determined by the student's growth and performance, including the student's performance on at least one standardized test. This does not take into consideration variables outside the control of the classroom teacher. This change to regulation was based on a public comment submitted by the governor. Additionally, as it was adopted at the board meeting in December 2012, the teachers were not given sufficient time to comment on this proposed change. This hearing is to give them an opportunity to voice their concerns with this change and to hear the department's reasoning behind the adoption of these regulations and the inclusion of the amendment. So with that, I'm going to go ahead and open up for people online. Dr. Stocksy, if you could just introduce yourself and who you are with, and then whoever else is online, please introduce themselves.
I'm Sandra Stocksy. I am a former member of the Massachusetts Department of Education. I was a senior associate commissioner there from 99 to 2003. I was also on Common Core's validation committee. I am now retired from the University of Arkansas. I speak only for myself.
Thank you. And I watched a lot of videos that you have produced, and we really appreciate the work and effort and knowledge that you're doing a great effort trying to explain what Common Core is, and we really appreciate your effort. Okay, with
Thank
that,
you very much. Could I just ask a quick question? Are we to stay on the line for, say, an indefinite amount of time while teachers testify, or will there be a specific time when I will be asked to respond to questions? Because I just wanted to know how I allot the time in the next 2 hours.
Okay. Basically, we're going to be taking public testimony first, and then we will give several people the opportunity, Scott Knievel, Andy Holloman, you, and then Ron Furrer, the opportunity to speak, and then it will be the Department of Education last. So it doesn't look like there's as much public testimony this morning. I'm not sure how many people have signed in to testify, but my guess is it's going to be less than 30 minutes.
So we should be on mute for about 30 minutes, and then we might be called after that. Is that what you may estimate?
That would be a good guess, between 30 and 45 minutes.
Okay. Is it possible for me to call back? Or should I just hang on?
I think it would be best for you to hang on.
Okay.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Okay. Let's, who else is online? Les, are you online?
Yes, the Department of Education is online. This is Les Morris, the Deputy Commissioner. I'm also here with Sandra Meredith, who is over teacher certification, teacher quality issues, and Marcy Herman is with us, our legislative liaison.
Okay, great. Okay. Would anyone else like to introduce themselves that is online? Okay, I'm going to go ahead and put the people online on mute just so we can hear clearly in the room. So if you could stand by.
Very small chunk of data. That's one of the other things that was very surprising. This is the first time. But to wrap up, the growth equation for math that we're going to use in practice really is conjecture. And I don't think anyone can point to one where it's established. The logic seems very circular. They're judging student growth based on test score. And if you want to judge how accurate it is, you look at how kids continue to do. Most kids that do well in test scores continue to do well in test scores. Kids that don't tend to not the growth models because of using test scores year after year. And the judging whether or not kids are good based on their scores, we're not sure the science is really there in kind of the self-control process. Given all that, we would like to see this delay until there's a lot more certainty about how accurate it is, and also truly make up a portion of the evaluation and not something that's potentially going to be put out of the
With that, I'm going to see if there's any questions for you. I know that I have a question. How would you recommend rating the kids if it's not based on, you know, the student growth, if it's not based on standard? What kind of model would you use?
Or you mean teacher evaluation stuff? Well, right now, it comes up as an accessible confusing course for classroom students. It seems like that's an area that can be explored as part of the evaluation. And that's something you see happen and has happened for several years. And there's an opportunity for discussion where, when you're talking elementary kids, state elementary kids in particular, you really aren't talking about a small number of individuals or teachers. Those kids, name by name, and have a lot of insight into the question of life. With most secondary teachers, it's a bigger group, but to facilitate just to know each student and each kind of look at that. This is math that's going to be done, I don't know where. And it's going to come back with a score, and no one can't be about it. I've seen some of the equations for both growth, and I've only had a couple of semesters of outlook for my. It's a very complex one, one of the does a lot of things. At the same time, however, number of competencies are. There is a provision for other measures of growth up to four, but at that point, you're really asking an educator to do an awful lot of analysis and argument about the growth. So, certainly, it can ought to be part of the discussion. But it's also mandating a formula that is essentially included in some science equipment. We think that's really possible. It was a central piece that the system we get on the formula that they should be. They should be in the classroom looking at that. They should be able to identify that the teacher is the problem, begin to identify what that issue is. And that may lead to a finding improvement, or it may lead to the realization that the teacher is the person. There's a range of responses
to the problem. All right, could anyone else? Dr. Kennedy, first. Just when you say the growth model, you talk about ASCII and how we're going to be measuring students'
achievement level.
The elastic state performance index. But what we move away from, was it at the waiver from those on SMI?
I'm using it sort of generically, but it's the idea that you can look at previous performance for students and project where they should go and then compare that to the answer you know, and then draw conclusions about the effect.
Any other questions? Thank you. Do you think, I've tried to spend a lot of time in my schools and done frequent visits, and so what everybody seems to be excited about is the RPI, and that is a better, tool for immediate response to some deficiencies. And do you see these kind of, new opportunities or new techniques as something that might help us further along in terms of, I think the goal is, as I see it, identifying students, early,
in their, you know, educational experience so that we can intervene appropriately and set them back on track. And, you know, there should be some metrics that we can use to measure that by. And I'm just wondering if a technique like RTI or other might help us with that performance.
And the RTI would be more informative, something for the guys instructing through the course of the year. And I'll drop back again, if at the end of the year, there's not a lot of growth, the principal should be addressing that. And the results from RTI, from the testing from RTI. I guess what I'm saying is if you have a teacher that correctly administers the test, the results of the test, and do that to a software principal, he needs to be responding to the children in the way that you would want to do. And that child still doesn't progress like you would want. Do you put the teacher on a final decision? That's where it leads to. Because the if result you're not expecting, the mandate that the teacher's going to be on plan, and we're not really sure what the tool for that is, if in fact they're doing everything that you would want them to do. Education that person sitting there in home, they seem to be doing it for us. Hopefully,
they would identify what the school is. It's going to be something different. And in some cases, it is. We understand that. We just don't want it done mathematically without halfway. So. All right. I'm going to make sure that you guys can hear online. Department of Education, Dr. Scott C., can you hear? Or not?
This is the Department of Education, and we're really not hearing any of the questions for the we're picking up maybe every 10th word. That's about it.
Okay, we'll have the...
I would agree that this is not coming through clearly.
Let's get a chair over here so they can testify.
Okay, so I'm going to have them come forth. He has a very, very soft voice, the person who just testified, but we will get people closer to the phone to ensure that you can hear, okay? So we apologize. We apologize for that. With that, I'm going to see, is Mark Van Arsdale, would you like to testify? Okay. We have a teacher, awesome teacher, actually, and a parent coming up to testify at this time.
I'm Mark Van Arsdale. I am both a parent of PK Student District, but also the Anchorage School District, as well as a teacher and technology coordinator in the Anchorage School District. Nothing more, but I'd like to express my concerns first as a parent. I'm a parent of a learning disabled student. My student is immersed in the special education system. I have a great deal of concern with the percentage of up to 50% data being used to evaluate my son's teacher. My son is a chronically flat performer on any type of student evaluation, particularly a formative or summative database test. My son has been blessed with some wonderful special ed teachers. Those special ed teachers all carry very small student loads. My son would disproportionately make my his teachers look terrible, to be honest. When it comes to regards on a summative test, we feel very fortunate, both my wife and I, that all the teachers that work with my son have great concern for his overall being as an overall person and growth as a person. They certainly are concerned for his academic growth as are we, but when it comes to any type of written assessment, it won't show his growth in the way that we know we see it, in the way that his teachers see it. And so, you know, getting quality special education teachers in particular is remarkably difficult. I know because there aren't that many of them around. It's a very difficult aspect of the profession to be in. And my concern is if you tag 50% of their evaluation student data, they carry very small student loads, a very few number of students like my son who might be very poor performers, may show very poor growth at different times in different evaluation systems, which makes it look who are terrible indicators, when in fact they're remarkable, some of the best that you can have. I also have a fear that from a parent perspective that this type of evaluation system would become very punitive in nature as opposed to becoming something that is designed to incentivize.
Can you speak up a little bit? Sure.
I have a concern that this type of variation system based on 50% data would become punitive in nature for educators as opposed to incentivizing better instruction. I know that certainly the HSD community, when it existed, became something that was exclusively punitive. It was punitive both for students preventing graduation, for students who had completed otherwise expected graduation requirements. It became punitive for schools. It became punitive for the education system. And I have concerned that an incentivized system, an evaluation system based exclusively on student data, or at least half on student data, would simply become punitive rather than incentivized. From my perspective as a teacher, I am the technology collaborator for Inglewood High School. So I'm one of those specialists. I do carry anywhere from 1 to 2 student classes during the year, but there's no formal evaluation test that can evaluate my performance as a technology collaborator. I can tell you that if I don't do my job, lots of teachers in my building can't do their job. And that certainly has an overall impact, but there is a remarkable number of educators in our system that are not language arts, math, social studies teachers, that are not formal education teachers. There are school nurses and librarians and reading specialists and technology collaborators and huge numbers of educators that are going to be evaluated in a system that don't necessarily translate into direct data. My other concern as an educator is that, to me, this removes some of the ability of principals to really shape the teams and their abilities. Certainly, one of the primary objectives of a good principal is to build a team of good educators in their buildings and to develop those educators into even better teachers. The use of 50% of data, and I'm not opposed to the use of data exclusively, but the use of 50% really ties the hands of a principal to really evaluate their own teachers and build teaching teams in ways that are meaningful and important to their buildings. That's my testimony.
Excellent. Excellent. A couple of your questions I do have online to ask Department of Education, so I'm very, very glad that you were able to bring those questions up. Department of Education, can you guys listen? Can you hear better now?
We could hear most of, I think we've heard all of his major points. There was only, in that case, only a few words we didn't hear, but we could hear much better. Thank you.
Okay, fantastic. We got the volume all the way up, and so hopefully things will be a little better. Please feel free to let me know if you can't hear, okay? But we have them sitting right next to the phone now, the testifiers, so. Okay. Thank you very, very much.
Sure. And I don't think I said anything that wasn't said in December in the public hearing, but I certainly still have concerns.
Nice to hear. Thank you very much. Next, we're going to go to Mr. Franca. He's another fabulous teacher. I think he works probably 20 out of 24 hours. He's just absolutely very, very dedicated, and his students just thrive under him. So with that, Mr. Franca.
Okay. I'm Matthew Franca. I teach at Eagle River High School of the Anchorage School District. After reading everything I can find online, I like to have two main concerns, and that is the definition of growth, because if you are a teacher like Mr. Van Arnstel stated with special needs students who are on the lower end of academic achievement, growth or the lack of growth can really destroy a teacher's score. On the other end of the spectrum, if you are a teacher who has a large number of honors above average students, if you have 2, 3, 4 of your classes that are the AP, IB, honors level classes, those students are already performing above all of the state test scores. You know, they're getting the far above proficient and above average rankings at the beginning of the school year, and then at the end of the school year, if they were to take a post-test, they're still going to score above average, far above proficient, So technically, there's no growth. So would that be detrimental to the teacher score? Because if, you know, if you already have a student that's, so to say, the A-plus student at the beginning of the year, they'll be the A-plus student at the end of the year. There's no growth. So how will that impact a teacher's score, so to say? The other concern I have is so many of our courses are not assessed by standardized tests. I mean, we have, like, for instance, at our high school, we have Project Lead the Way, a film engineering-based program. If a teacher is in that department all day teaching four or five classes, what kind of assessment, you know, will there be for those teachers? And I can also see where teachers that are in, like, art and performing arts, theater, drama, debate, choir, all of those, even physical education, how do you assess growth in a standardized format or in a data collected, you know, what kind of data collection will there be for teachers in those particular style or discipline? Those are really the two big concerns I have, is that definition of growth, and then in those non-traditional formal departments, how do you assess data or collect scores?
Excellent, and I've definitely got that down. So I'm absolutely going to ask the Department of Education that question when they're up. So let's going to talk.
So the last two speakers now, education professionals, have both expressed concerns about this method of assessing growth. And I'm just wondering if you have, a different idea of what might work. And the only thing I can think of is for students that have an IEP, for example, it's a more collaborative approach where you involve the families. And, you know, is that something? I mean, is that really what we should be thinking about as the model for every student? I mean, maybe that's... I could see where just thinking about the challenge of having a student whose home life is, bad, and so, a lot of the things that need to happen at home to help the student be ready for learning at school are not happening. So the teacher is going to be limited in what kind of impact they can have. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I can see where, after years of sitting on sort of the IEP committee with students and their families, their counselor, professionally, I can see where it really impacts a kid's learning and achievement levels, because you have people, including the students themselves, looking at different aspects and with different, specialties. So multiple pairs of eyes can really take something apart and look for ways of improvement. I don't see how, though, in an efficient manner, you could do such with thousands and thousands, with all students. It might be effective. It might be a great idea, but I don't know how you would enact that. I mean, honestly, because that would be a little.
Staff-wise,
just time-wise. I mean, if an average meeting is 1 hour and a teacher has 150 to 160 students, and you were to meet, once a semester, let's say, twice a year, where does that time, I mean, technically come in? There's only 24 hours in a day. Where does the time come from, I mean, we do the parent-teacher conference night, in the fall and spring, and those are, I think, a great way to get some insight on a student's, so to say, life outside of the classroom from parents and family. But again, that one night, just a few minutes, and again, it's on a voluntary basis as far as, parent-student attendance. I'm like, it's an ambiance. I don't know how.
Good luck as far as it leads the way, okay?
Yeah.
I know we're working,
oh, going
we're
well,
working
going
really well,
well
with your school in regards to that. So thank you. Thank you so much. You are one of the most incredible, hardworking teachers, and I really appreciate what you do at our school, at Eagle River High School. Mm-hmm. You've got some amazing teachers there. So I'm going to go ahead, and I want to see Chuck. Did you want to test for you here just and how about Tyler? Okay. Glenn, Morgan, would you like to come testify, please?
I'm just worried about the reading. I have a good but I like the computer comment.
Absolutely. Feel free. And you can come set up here if you'd like. Okay. Hopefully Department of Education, Dr. Trotskin, whoever else is online, you'll be able to hear. I believe he has a loud voice, but state your name clearly, please.
Glenn Morgan, retired. Some of the kids I talk to grandparents now. So, it's been a while. But I taught the last school associated with Northwest Elementary School. I've been a special ed teacher. I've been director of special ed programs. I've been a director of special ed and principal of a regional high school. So I have a background experience. Whenever testing comes up, people tend to polarize themselves. My experience has shown me that the lower income school districts that I worked in town schools, the women who sent testing. But I worked in very wealthy communities, I found it in the graduate testing. So if we have conflict, with the purpose of understanding why you're testing, all the people in the process. Now I wanted to address specifically special needs children. Because often people use special needs children to say their testing will not work. First of all, we're talking about those kids who having a zero condition in the case. IEPs, federal law, trumps state law when it comes to special education. Which means then, when you sit down and develop an IEP, you can tailor to that child that I need and prepare essentially the piece of child. So, that could be an exception to this law, it seems to me, of these regulations. Let me give you an example of how we dealt with kids secondary well. Especially if you have specific thoughts. Had a parent come to me when the child in high school was a freshman and said, my child is very good with his hands, he loves mechanical things, so I want you to develop a four-year curriculum that will prepare him to run a gas station and operate it in more comfortable. The law of this, in fact, in Illinois, the law back there is that they have educated in the city of California, age 22, up to age 22 for professional needs. In doing so, we understand how the learning continuum subject takes longer to learn something. So, use a standardized testing based on years or whatever, the grade for sympathetic work, especially if it depends on what the needs are. So the question is, do we really take enough time to address the needs of special needs and see whether or not we can make the state test for some accommodation, some changes that they might take the standardized testing that their test book should be processed in the special needs. The elementary level, we found that on a work in the last school, they didn't have any problems individualizing the program, working with the team, taking a look at our group of kids, like you got a group of kids from the third, fourth, and fifth grade, you probably have a performance level from first grade to seventh grade. So how do you deal with that? How do you get kids to pass the content? How do you measure it? We would take a subject like math, the argument that you're going to get them wrong. But we use the rate that take a subject like math, give an operation on addition and subtraction because some kids are on both of the basic stuff, some kids can work successful, some kids can work fraction, and if they master the content, you move them along. So it seems to me that you can build into the system like this somewhere that you can get a true evaluation. We can create post-testing if we're looking at mastering content. We're not predicting the future necessarily, but we're saying they're ready for something based on what they've already learned. So whatever model you use, you have to take that into consideration. I can understand the frustration of teachers but there are also to be unreal expectations when it comes to testing. You can't just generalize about a group of kids and expect the same outcome from all. Let's say we made a special education. Well, the kids come in the car, what the hell does that mean? You're 25 years old, you have a sixth grade function level, you've got 25 years of living. What is that when you're talking about against his mindism? There's many factors that can look like that, particularly when it comes to testing. So you really have to take a look at the special needs when it's talking about. There's enough examples of testing because we want to know what they're learning. But you can't hold them to the same standard unless there is an agreement with the parent and the educator that yes, the kid can do it. We often fail with youngsters who will be nullifying people in the testing because the groups don't take a look at that. And demand by law, which comes from the state is saying, what we should be doing for that kid in charge. I haven't had a chance to read this, but I feel like
thank you very much. You're putting, we have one question for you.
And actually, I'll speak loud enough and I'll reiterate it so the department can hear it. And really the question that I have is to the two educators that spoke about special ed, and then we have another retired teacher that spoke about the IEP trumping, if you will, the evaluations that the parts that you were concerned about. And I'm just wondering, after he spoke, do you have comments in regards to what he spoke about and how that may change what you might have said had he spoken first? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Because it's very intriguing. And certainly I'll try to speak up and I'll reiterate it. It's kind of how I verbalize things anyway, and it also makes sure that the department hears it. So
I do have a comment, and I'll take it back.
This is Mr. Van Arsdale, for those who are taking notes.
To me, we're actually discussing two different topics. One is the evaluation of students, whether it be regular ed students or specialized students, and then the evaluation of the teacher. And my primary concern, look at the specialized parents, and as a regular teacher, is to evaluate the teacher based at 50% on student data, particularly student data connected to the standard of there's no question that we have, over the last several decades, developed very elaborate ways to assess learning of our students and to assess the learning even of our specialized students. My son has a very elaborate IEP. He's evaluated quarterly on progress towards goals in that IEP. He is looked at both by a regular teacher, as well as a special ed teacher, as well as us as parents. My concern is moving the bar to the up to 50% of student data being used to evaluate his teachers, specifically because then special ed teacher appears very long remote and it can be disproportionately affected by a very few number of students. An elementary special ed teacher may carry as few as 10 students. The poor performance of just a handful of those students could literally jeopardize their profession.
And so if I hear you correctly, And for those listening, this is Representative Gaddis. If I hear you correctly, what I'm hearing you say is you recognize that the students already have an IEP and that part is not where you had really your bigger issue, but it really was the fact that if there are a low student-to-teacher ratio, especially in special ed, that it could skew the outcomes for the teacher and how they were evaluated. And is that pretty much
where
it came from? Okay.
Absolutely correct. It is extremely difficult to get good people in the special education, and if we make it even more difficult to keep them in the profession, that has tremendous concerns for our future and educating those difficult.
And so to reiterate what I'm sure you say, it's tough enough to get special ed teachers, make it even tougher by the mere fact that they have a small student ratio, so Could it be said, though, utilizing that same, I'll play the devil's advocate, that you could get potentially more special ed teachers wanting to get in special ed because that student ratio is so much smaller that they have a greater opportunity to excel? I mean, the opposite could be true as well. Just saying.
You would be moving to a very, very small data pool with very, very unreliable data, really because there's so much variability in very small steps.
Agreed. So anyway, I understood that what your concerns were. I just wanted to be real clear and wanted the department to be real sure that at least we heard you. Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Absolutely. So with that, I am sorry, I forgot to recognize staff from Senator Stevens' office. Doug, I know you're online, so thank you for being online as well. And with that, we're going to go ahead and Dr. Stotsky, we have several questions for you. And first of all, we wanted to give you the opportunity to speak if you wish.
Thank you very much. Can you hear me well?
Yes, we can.
All right. Let me just make a few remarks to begin with. I am, to begin with, very concerned that a decision was made to tie teacher evaluations to any percentage, never mind 50%, even 20%, without having testing experts talking to the State Board of Education or the governor about the problems with a single test and a test based on Common Core-based standards. There isn't, to me, any professional basis for tying any percentage of the score to a test that is based on standards that have not been validated. And we need to go back and think about how you use a test that isn't even going to be vetted by Alaska reviewers, so far as I know, that will be used to evaluate teachers when the test is based on standards themselves that have not been validated. And even though the test, which I gather has not yet been totally decided upon in Alaska, perhaps it has in recent weeks since I last spoke on the subject, but given that the test has not yet been fully fleshed out, even if it's based on Alaska standards right now, those standards are almost identical to, if not identical to, Common Core standards, which are not internationally benchmarked or research-based. So you've got a dubious test based that we don't know anything about, based on dubious standards, and yet 50% ultimately of the teacher evaluation is to be tied to such an instrument. It doesn't seem to be professional or fair to the teachers. I'm not even sure how student growth would be evaluated because value-added methodologies have been subjected to a great deal of criticism. Let me go on with just a few other suggestions relating to this. I think that perhaps the effort to hold teachers feet to the fire, so to speak, would be better placed if it looked at tougher licensure tests for prospective teachers and administrators. Alaska, to my knowledge, uses Praxis tests for elementary teachers and other specialists, and I think that should be reviewed by the Alaska Department of Education. We know from research, I was on the National Mathematics Advisory Committee. We know from research that the only characteristic of an effective teacher is mastery of subject matter. So we need to place that first somewhere, and it's not in the professional standards as the priority. And that's what we need to think about as opposed to tying teacher evaluations of teachers who have been prepared without a focus on mastery of subject matter to ultimately a 50% tie to their student scores coming from a test based on non-internationally benchmarked and non-research-based standards. the house that has been created, in a sense, by state board's decision to follow up the governor's decision is a very weak house, but it's based on even weaker foundations. Now, that's all I'll say, and I'll be happy to answer questions.
Okay, perfect. We have a question for Wes Gaddis, and then I actually have a few questions as well.
And I guess my question, and I'd like you to reiterate it, just to be sure I was really clear. What I thought I heard you say in regards to mastery, that statistics bear out, if you will, that, quite frankly, if the teacher doesn't know the material, it makes it pretty darn tough for them to teach the material. Is that pretty much what you said? I mean, you said that they had to master the material in order to teach it. And I guess that's a...
It's common sense.
I guess so. And so I'm really glad that that bear that out.
That teachers need to know the subject they're teaching. This is what the research shows, that when you look at a correlation between teachers' mastery of the subject they're teaching and improvement in student scores, that's where the rubber hits the road, so to speak. That's what matters. And all of this doesn't really matter that much because you're not focusing on what actually we know from research, which is very limited, but at least that one important characteristic comes out from a research.
Which is that the teacher knows the material or know the subject matter, correct?
Right.
And I'm sorry, I just boiled it down to kind of common sense, that if you don't know it, it's pretty darn hard to teach it. Certainly, secondly, it's been my experience that there are some people that are just gifted at teaching. So, A, they have to know what they're teaching, and B, then they have to take that certain skill, that gift that people have to be able to inspire people to learn it. And I think that's the part that's really, in my opinion, to quantify.
You can meet
people, and I can make an instant connection, and I know that that person can teach me. At the same time, my friend Representative Tara may be next to me. She may connect in a different way with a different type of teacher. Doesn't mean either teacher was a bad teacher. It truly meant that they were not able to connect, therefore not be able to... It's an interesting concept, but I guess at the end of the day, there's no doubt in my mind. If you don't know the material, it's hard to teach it.
That is the basis for then evaluating teachers. Can they knowledgeably... sensibly, rationally teach the content of what they have a license to teach, the field that they majored in, or whatever. That's what a good administrator used to be able to look at or see when a good administrator had the time to go into teachers' classrooms years ago and evaluate, especially new teachers. But the first thing is, do they know what it is they're supposed to be teaching? And then, how well do they teach it, which is the pedagogy they're supposed to learn, because I am in no way against pedagogical training, but that is built on your academic knowledge of the subject matter, and all of this doesn't get at any of that because of the problem with the test and standards on which they're based in ELA in particular. So, go ahead with your next question.
Okay, Dr. Stofsky, first of all, you were on the validating committee for Common Core, and I want to know about how many people were on that and who on that committee actually had curriculum experience, research-based, like, for example, you, with a PhD in regards to truly having an understanding of what good standards look like.
There were... By the end of the year, 09 to 10, 29 people on this committee. It started with about 24, and then a few people were added. Five of those 29 did not sign off on the standards as internet benchmark, research-based, rigorous. Those are the facts about the case. I was the only English language arts standards expert because of the work I had done not only in the Massachusetts Department of Education, but with many other states around the country, California, Indiana, others, advising and helping them, including Achieve Incorporated, because I did benchmarking work for them in those intervening years. There was only one mathematician on the validation committee, Professor Milgram from Stanford University. There were other people who have been called math experts, but they were all located in departments of education or had degrees, doctoral degrees, in mathematics education. He was the only person with a PhD in mathematics. He also did not sign off on the math standards. I looked at ELA, he looked at math. This is just background information. The standards have yet to be internationally benchmarked in the years since they were adopted almost overnight by a variety of different states and had names in some cases changed so that it would look as if they really weren't Common Core but were something else. But all you had to do was look at them to see what they were. So that's the basis for the question question that you're asking me. What was this validation committee composed of, and what did it do? Do you have any further questions about the
Several of us have questions, but the first thing is, why did you not validate these standards of one of a handful of people in the nation? And there was two of you.
Validate ELA standards because they weren't internationally benchmarked. I kept asking for the information, never got it. This was one of the reasons Professor Milgram couldn't validate the math standards. They were not research-based, and that was related in particular to the way in which the standards were organized so that 50% of what teachers teach in K-12 is something called informational text, and they have to reduce literary study to about 50%. That's in the English class, not talking about other subject areas. There was no research base for that very idiosyncratic decision that was made by the person considered the chief architect, David Coleman, who is now president of the College Board. So the point was, I could not get any information on international benchmarking. I couldn't locate, because I'm an academic researcher by training, could not locate any research base for the major issues in the ELA standards. They emphasize writing more than reading, which is totally against 100 years of research on the topic. So those were among the major reasons I could not sign off on these standards as valid, useful, research-based standards.
Okay, and with that, have you looked at Alaska academic standards, and how do they compare with the Common Core standards?
They seem to be identical, except for the introductory text material, which was reduced. That was the last time I looked at those standards. It looked like it was primarily a cut-and-paste job for the standards themselves. It was simply the introductory matter that was shortened. Now, I'm talking about ELA. I did not look at the math standards, and I am not qualified to answer questions about whether there were any changes made in the secondary math standards in particular, which are very difficult for any layperson, unless you're in science, math, or engineering. It's very difficult to understand how to analyze a set of secondary math standards. But the ELA or Alaska looked just about identical as far as the standards were concerned to Common Core. They want to be called, you want to call them something different, that's your choice. But
they're called the Alaska Academic Standards.
Right. I mean, it's like saying if you call a rose or a fox a weasel, that doesn't make the fox a weasel. I mean, this is maybe not the best metaphor or analogy to use, but the point is you can call it anything you want, but it hasn't changed the nature of what it was you were looking at. So that's my judgment from having looked at what are called the Alaska Academic Standards.
Okay, great, because I've done a lot of reading online. Just at first I was very open-minded about Common Core, and then I became a skeptic, and now I'm actually really, really questioning if this is the right thing for Alaska, and that's why I'm definitely drilling down in regards to this. If you wouldn't mind, I want to ask two more questions because I've never had the opportunity to talk to you one-on-one, but the rigorous or different, you know, are these more rigorous standards, or are they just a different, because some people have said they're more rigorous at some of the lower ages, and then they become much, much lower at a higher level. And so what is just your overall with the English language art?
With the ELA standards, they are inappropriate at the primary grade level in many ways because they ask for things that little kids, a certain amount of writing, that little children simply can't do yet. So they're inappropriate. I wouldn't call that rigor. I would simply call it inappropriateness because there are differences. Rigor means that they are more challenging academically, and there is nothing at the high school level that is more challenging academically in Common Core standards than what was already available in many, many states. That I know from having looked at the ELA standards in all states. That didn't mean that whatever was out there was perfect. There is no perfect set of standards. But Common Core is so mediocre that it cannot help but drag Alaskan students down. There is nothing that will challenge them, as far as we can see, in the standards, which are skills. They, for the most part, do not delineate content. And I don't mean specific works, because that is against state law in every state. Can't delineate specific works, but they can set the framework for literary periods, movements, bodies of different kinds of texts, and they certainly shouldn't be diminishing complex literary texts, which is how students learn to do analytical reading and writing. And when people think about where they ever learned how to do that in high school, it was in the English class when an English teacher trained, taught students how to read between the lines of a complex literary work. Think, for example, of the to be or not to be soliloquy in Hamlet. On the surface, it looks simple, but that's how you learn, under good teacher's guidance, to think about what something means by going beyond what the words look as if they mean on the surface. So the ELA standards have no rigor in them, and if someone says they're rigorous, they need to point to what it is they think is rigorous, because so far there isn't anyone who can say what is rigorous about the standards. I don't see anything in them, and I would welcome any comments on if one considers a rigorous standard.
Yeah, seems like a good marketing message, but sometimes, you know, you got to dig deep and figure out where that is. So I have just a few more questions. You said something about Dr. Coleman being head of the College Board. We have done research and found that the new ACT, SAT, and WorkEase, which is administered by the ACT, is all aligned to the Common Core. Is that your findings as well?
That appears to be what has happened, although we're getting fork-tongue messages in the last week. I can't tell you from day to day what people who represent ACT or SAT are going to say. Many of them are trying to say both things simultaneously. But when David Coleman, who, by the way, does not have a PhD, he's not a Dr. Coleman, when David Coleman became president of the College Boards in March, he said he was going to align the SATs to the level of Common Core, which means they will be aligned downward. He's changing the AP tests. So far as we know, they will be changed downward. We don't know because yet exactly what has happened because we haven't seen these tests yet. But the SAT, we have been told, is going to be, quote, more accessible. It will not have certain features. So as far as we know, it's going to be easier. So where does that leave a state like Alaska? And this is something I am now addressing wherever I talk to state representatives. I was in Albany, New York yesterday. And I am suggesting that even Alaska have your higher ed institutions get together and develop a matriculation test. That means that high school graduates would have to aim for this test in order to get into one of Alaska's higher education institutions. but they're the ones who should be setting up the test. You don't need SAT. You don't need ACT. You don't need work keys. You need tests developed by your own educators for your own students. I'll stop there for your
Okay, well, this is very, very helpful. Basically, another question I had, because this hearing is on teacher evaluations and them being linked to these new standards and these new tests, what do you think about a teacher's 50% of their evaluation in approximately 4 years being linked to...
A very bad idea. I don't think it's fair to teachers, and it makes no sense for anyone who understands testing and measurement. These tests are based on standards that have not been validated. I don't know how the governor could have made such a recommendation on his own. I don't know how a state board could have even approved and incorporated such a recommendation without asking for a hearing at which they listen to testing experts, and I'm sure there are some in Alaska. There are testing experts all over this country, but hear from them about the notion of tying a teacher's evaluation to tests based on mediocre standards. Simply unfair teachers.
Thank you for your input, and I will tell you that we have numerous very good resources that tell us that the ACT and the SAT are aligned to Common Core. If you go to ACT.org, it says Common Core State Standards. ACT is pleased to be an active partner with Common Core State Standards Initiative. And so if you go to that, it'll right on their website tell you that they're aligned. And I've also heard something, whether this is true or not, I saw it in a video that basically said that the universities that are now aligned to Common Core as well at the university level, there's something about not taking remedial tests, and now the math
right.
is lowered to Algebra 1, which I found completely perplexing. And I'm drilling down. I was just at the UAA Board of Regents and the State Board of Education 2 weeks ago here, and I'm trying to drill down and get that information if the university actually did sign that they weren't going to give remedial. But is that true information?
This is, I think, part of the race to the top application, and if Alaska got a waiver or if it committed itself when it sent in RTTT applications in 2010, there were two deadlines, January and June of 2010, and in the text of that application form, the states who applied, whether or not they got any money, had to commit themselves to getting the cooperation of their higher education faculty in this respect. They would agree that students who pass a college readiness test, so far as we know to be given in grade 11, will then be able to take credit-bearing courses in their freshman year. Now, we don't know where passing score is going to be set. We haven't seen the test yet because they're going to start next year. But if you allow any test that's based on Common Core-like standards to be in place next year, you will end up with students who may be at a grade 8 or Algebra 1 level going on to a higher education institution, which could be the University of Alaska system, as far as I know, and then your mathematics department at the university will have to make sure that whatever mathematics courses they take, which will be for credit, are accessible to them. So what would be the nature of the math course they would be ready for? Algebra 2? Intermediate algebra? We don't know yet. This is a work in progress. But we do not understand how higher education, particularly engineering schools, have been asleep at the switch in not understanding what grade 11 college readiness, passing it, and taking 4-credit courses at your higher ed level is going to mean for STEM, S-T-E-M, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics coursework, or 4-year degree programs that have existed for STEM careers. We don't know yet. And I think it's very important to get higher ed involved in vetting any test you choose for K to 12 for your standards that right now are based on Common Core. This would be the most responsible thing the legislature could do, is to require those tests to be vetted by your own higher ed experts from math, science, engineering in particular.
Well, when I was at the Board of Regents meeting 2 weeks ago, the second in command there of academics basically said they were in alignment with the national agenda, and it just sounded like they were just completely set on, you know, getting data. If they could just get more data from the kids, you know, then with this new answers program and thing, everything was going to be all right. And I'm like, well, first of all, you know, a lot of the kids in Alaska aren't going to be going to our university, but to me, being excellent at what you do is going to be the best magnet to get kids there, not drilling down and figuring out what they did in kindergarten when we have a considerable amount of people that do move out of the state. So I really believe that they need to be focusing on excellence at their own university and not data mining or getting tremendous information, you know, on the kids right now.
But to give you details, the thing is, if they say they're consistent with a national agenda, what is that agenda? I want to have details. This is what I have learned over the years as a researcher. Find out what people mean. Have them show you what that level of mathematical knowledge is. What does it mean for someone who wants to be a science major, for example, or an economics major? You've got to get some critical details. You have got to go below this general blob language, which is what a lot of administrators talk about and talk with, and find out what that really means in terms of level of knowledge in an academic area. And unless you hear from them, get an engineering professor or dean to tell you, will students who are determined to be college ready by whatever test you use in grade 11, will they be able to start an engineering college in Alaska? No, it's true. Most of your students, as in any state, don't go on to the university. They may go to community colleges. Many of them may go into occupational trades or go right to work. But the point is, if it's a college readiness test in grade 11, what does that mean for the first-year engineering student in your engineering colleges? You have at least one in Alaska.
Right, yeah, we have some great engineering schools here in Alaska, and I think you've made a very, very good point. We do have a lot of students that are attracted to those engineering schools, and I really do hope that these professors are paying attention to these standards and ensuring that they are high quality. And
they won't pay attention if they're not invited to. That's okay. The problem. If they're not invited to by the legislature or the governor, okay. Why should they pay attention to high school standards? They're going to assume they will be the same as has been the case for 50, 70 years. So they've got to be invited.
Okay, well, that's a very, very good point. And if you don't mind, I'm going to ask you one more question. I should have sent these online, you know, to you ahead of time, but do you see any correlation between the No Child Left Behind waiver and the Common Core initiative that going across this nation? Do you see
the waiver? And I don't know the details of the Alaska waiver, if you have a waiver, but the waiver that states were given by the USED, those waivers were an effort to let off the hook the states who are committed, and all of them were committed under No Child Left Behind, to let them off the hook for having all students reach a level called proficient by 2014, which is this year. And since all states, knew that they could not achieve proficiency with all their students, they have many of them, not all of them, which is interesting, I don't know the exact number, maybe it's in the 20s, who have asked for waivers and received waivers. But the waivers commit the state to adopting the Common Core standards and the tests based on them. They come with strings attached, in other words, from Washington, D.C., very tight strings. And that's what other states have been hearing from about these strings. Now, if Alaska wants strings, that's the choice that your governor and your legislature can make. If you don't want those strings, then you've got to find out about the details of that contract, who signed it, and what it implied.
Right, and I have it right in front of me, and I think that's where my frustration as a legislator is coming. The State Board of Education, the Department of Education, moved forward in regards to all this and adopting the standards and getting the waiver and all that, and the state legislature really didn't have, we didn't sign off on anything. So that,
in the dark, as most state legislatures were, now is the time, it's never too late, to find out what you're committed to, because there will be bills that you will
right, have. And that's exactly what they, you know, that why I have the Department of Education online, and we're trying to follow the State Board of Education, and I'm having a very, very hard time. I've asked them, you know, what are the federal mandates, and what are we as state legislators going to be asked to fund? What does this look like 10 years? You know, what's the total package? And I'm having a very, very hard time getting information. So I'm glad the Department of Education is online. And we'll I'll be asking again today, like I did in the last hearing, for this information. What are these federal mandates? Because we fund as a state, far more than the federal government does in education. Yet the strings attached to the federal requirements for getting the money are much, much, much higher. And we seem to be being overlooked at a state legislature. The train is going just very, very fast, and I think it's our job and our responsibility as elected people, from the people, to listen to the teachers, to listen to the parents, and to have authority and oversight over education. And I think it's very, very important that we get active. And really, I have the waiver right in front of me, and we are studying it carefully. And going to be able to ask the department some good questions when they come up next. But with that, we have a couple questions here. So Representative Gaddis, who's the chair of our education department here in the state legislature and on the House side, I have a few questions for you.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I may have not understood Ms. Stotsky, but I thought I heard you indicate that Alaska applied for the Race to the Top money. And I don't think we did.
She did.
I misunderstood that. And I guess my bigger question is, what's an international benchmark? I'm just not really not clear, but I heard you indicate that over and over with the
standards.
Sure, I'll be happy. And I'm not sure, I'm trying to correlate how that may or may not apply with our Alaska state standards, and I'm just not sure how they connect.
Sure. International benchmarking is a long, multisyllabic term that simply means, are they comparable to the best sets of standards in high-achieving countries, most of which are Asian, South Asian countries? And that's all that implies. Can you take a look at whatever set of standards might be for, say, an Algebra 2 course based on Common Core standards, and then see how similar or different they are to a set of Algebra 2 standards in some other countries that are high achieving. That's what international benchmarking would consist of. You'd have to have, in that case, some math experts to do that, obviously, because you have to have people who can understand the topics in Algebra 2 and be able to compare them across countries. Hong Kong, Singapore,
okay.
South Korea, so on. Part of what needs to be done for that.
Right, and I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but I think what I'm hearing you say is the international benchmarks that you discussed are benchmarks that that we don't have, or that we're not using, or that you're concerned that
we don't have them. Common Core didn't produce them.
We as a state, and I come from when the state did not have standards, at least from a state standpoint. The school district had, the school board had their own standards. Teachers taught to those. We certainly took our quarterly and final exams. And going through college, I'll have to say they did a pretty good job. That might have been a few years ago. I get that. But where I guess I'm struggling with is it's my understanding, we certainly were not aligned internationally. I was with the BIA schools, if you will, but that being said, we now have state standards that we're all kind of measuring different communities against, or with, I should say, with each other. Why is it necessary to measure internationally? Because, I mean, there's a huge squawk with us just measuring domestically.
I don't understand why that
raises to the level, and I guess I'll circle back around to where teacher evaluations and how it affects that.
Okay. Let me start with the why international benchmarking matters. First of all, it matters legally. The standards that were promised to the states were to be internationally benchmarked. That was on, and it still is on. The
and who made knowledge. These promises? I'm not following.
The people who developed Common Core. They made the promise that these were to be internationally benchmarked standards. That was the expectation they gave. The Race to the Top applications contained language. This is legal language now. It's coming from the U.S. Department of Ed that says that states will be given internationally benchmarked standards for doing X, Y, and Z. So this was the expectation for the development of these standards. Why did we develop these national standards to begin with? You have to go back to the very beginning.
Well, and I guess that's another subject, and I don't want to take up a lot of valuable time going through that particular when I know that folks want to ask questions from the department and really stay on focus with the teacher evaluation. So thank you, and I'll have the opportunity to talk to you privately and get some more info. So I don't want to take up other folks' time going there.
No, there's a very short answer. So if you don't have standards that are allied to the best that's out there, and we don't even know what they're allied to because they haven't been validated, why would you tie teacher test scores to them? That's the common sense question.
Right, and I know now with our 278, our new education bill that we passed, there was lots of links with the No Child Left Behind waiver and the same marketing, you know, the Common College and Career Ready and having to take a test, and now the state's required to pay for an ACT, SAT work piece, which are aligned to the Common Core. You can't get a diploma unless you take one of these tests. So it's like nobody can escape it in the state. I mean, even the homeschool, from what I can tell, we're still digging down and trying to figure it out. But we're very, very concerned that even the homeschool, these people who are, some of them are independent, yes, there's no escaping. And if they want to get into college and they have to take ACT, SAT, right now, we did put in that 278 some provisions that we are very concerned about, Common Core and any state funding being put in that. There's two places that we got put in the bill, so we'll be monitoring that very, very closely, that we do not want.
You're not developing your own state tests, which is what I'm suggesting would get you out of a lot of this trouble.
And
your
we
own,
do,
your
we
own
are,
matriculate tests for your own right. state.
Right, and I think you're... And the Department of Education will be on shortly. We're doing it through AIA, which is the Kansas. And I want to know how closely, if the Alaska state academic standards are identical virtually to the Common Core standards, then it would seem to me that these tests, these quote-unquote independent tests we're doing, would have to be pretty darn similar to like SBAC and PARC. So I will be asking the department, are they different or are they the same? And so anyway, we really do need to do that to ask the department. So we're going to be bringing them on that. As far as I know, no cut score, you know, even if a student just comes and signs their name to these ACT, SAT, or work keys now, as far as I know, that the state still has to pay for them. And there's no cut score at this time. And we have asked that the state set those now, relinquish this to a national at a national level, that we want to be involved in that. So we have maintained a little bit of control, and I'm really happy that we have some opportunity to maintain some of our power in regards to this, because we're not part of the consortium any longer the SBAP or the PARP, which I'm very, very, very happy. So I think as a state, we're in better position than other states are, but we still need to make sure that that we're using those liberties that we've carved out in order to do the right thing for the state of Alaska in education right now. So with that, I'm going to see if there's any other questions here. I don't believe there's any other questions, Dr. Scottsky, but I do want to recognize a couple other people. First of all, thank you very much. You were very informative, and we hope to stay in touch with you, Dr. Stosky. With that, I apologize. I did not recognize Representative Tammy Wilson, Representative Tito, who are online. We also have Charles Boyle with NEA, and Brittany Hutchinson with President Huggins' office from the Senate. So thank you very, very much. All of you have said you do not wish to speak at this time, but I do not mind being interrupted if you do have any questions at this time. Is there anybody online that has questions? With that, we're going to go ahead and move on at this time. I'm going to see if there's anybody else in the audience that has any questions or any would like to do testimony.
By the way,
could
you just make an offer? Sure. Administrators were left out of this.
Administrators were left out?
In terms of evaluating teachers.
Okay.
It seems to me there should be a requirement that they have so much staff knowledge on this. But I don't think that it's
okay.
Often when we evaluate them,
just one second. Are you listening, Department of Education? Can you hear? Or would you like him to come up?
We can't hear clearly, but we've got enough to suggest that he's saying that administrators were not involved, I think, in something, but I'm not sure what.
Well, it's just a thought I have.
Can you say your name just for those who are
listening? Glenn Mordeen, a retired administrator. The administrator has a real role in assisting and helping the teacher with maximum performance from the children. It's not simply an administrator's role to make sure the child has a child. But I do think that the administrators need perhaps tied into this kind of a program. What kind of evaluation techniques will they do to evaluate the teacher's total performance? I might add, on a practical level, there has to be some kind of understanding of what kind of a population, what a parent's role is going to be in helping that child achieve. I think that's essential. Just as a practical matter, as a regional high school principal, there were times when I'd ask a high school parent to come to me and complain about a teacher, I would say, how many solids is your son taking? I don't know. How many hours a night does your child study? I don't know. So it depends on teachers. You just can't simply lay a thing on it and expect them to be 100% parent, teacher, administrator in terms of helping that child learn. The other thing is that with secondary students, they have to have a clear expectation of what they're expecting from them. You know, so some kind of standards have to be set. On a practical level, I can remember when I took over Regent High School and trying to deal with that issue, I required the teachers to prepare a syllabus for not only the student view, what was expected, what the outside meetings would be, what the tests would be, what the spot quizzes and what have you. The parents got a copy of that. Everybody was working together to get maximum performance in the best interest of the student. This thing is not that simple. A laying out a teacher, this is what you're going to do if you don't meet this criteria.
Thank you. Okay, and with that, we're going to go ahead. Rick Smith, would you like to come up? Okay, we have one more testimony, Department of Education, and then you will be on, okay?
Thank you very much. My name is Rick Smith. I'm an elementary teacher, and I'm for the high school secondary. And I've watched this, you know, a little bit coming along, but what I'm fearful of most is the fact that when you start taking teachers and evaluating them on what their students can do, which I believe we need to be evaluated on, and I really truly believe that principals are very subjective when they evaluate. It could be somebody that they feel is a friend of theirs and they may evaluate lighter. It could be somebody who's given them flack to evaluate a little bit tougher. So in those situations, I think we need something that we can physically say, okay, here's something, some data we can look at, and we can subjectively say, this is a good or not a good teacher. So I'm not opposed to something along that line, but when you start taking the students' test scores and you say that this teacher is no longer looked at as a good teacher, though they're really working very hard and they're making progress with their students, which is what we're looking for. But according to the test scores with these students, that no longer makes that teacher a good teacher. What are we going to do when schools that are not making AYP now, entire schools, are not showing progress? And those teachers are already fearful that they're going to have somebody coming in now based on what their students are performing at now, and again, based on what is their home life, which I've taught 26 years, I'm on the end of my career. I've seen lots of different kids come through. I've seen kids that, and I'm very lucky to work in a school that we have great school and parent participation, which is awesome. But what about those schools that don't? And now we're grading those teachers based on what these kids are bringing to school from their home life. And we're going to say this entire school, all of a sudden, we're going to look at those entire teachers there and say, oh, based on test scores, which basically are not very good at all in many schools now, what are we going to do when those teachers go, I don't want to teach here anymore then? If I'm going to be graded on students that we already know their home life is terrible, they're coming to school and they're not worried about trying to learn math, they're trying to figure out who's going to be yelling at me when I get home? What's it going to be like when I leave school today? I've got to walk through my neighborhood, which isn't safe. If they're not there to learn, and the teachers are being graded on these students because they are not there to learn, they're just trying to survive themselves, what are we going to do with all these teachers who want transfers from those buildings? Where are we going to put them? And are they going to want to leave this state and leaving us high and dry yet again where we cannot get quality teachers because this is what we're bringing down on teachers saying, well, sorry, it's these students that are bringing you down. It's not the students, it's their home life. It's everything they bring to school every day. And we're going to be graded on that. I mean, I don't think it's fair. In my building, we're going to be graded pretty well. My building is one of the top schools in the district. That's awesome. But I don't work in one of those where every day I go to work and go, got 30 kids in my classroom, and two-thirds of them can't do anything. They're not there working on the level that they should be in the first place. When I walk into my classroom today, I know that my kids can do anything I ask them to do and more. That's just not fair when you start looking at an entire school that's working with kids that are socioeconomic, whatever mental capacity that they're working at. They're bringing a lot to the table that we're not going to grade those teachers on and say, it's your fault. It's not the teacher's fault. It's community's fault. It's the public's fault. It's parenting's fault. And the teacher gets blamed for this year after year after year. We're letting down society. We have the most important job in the world. But it's the parents who have the most important job in the world. And if they can't bring kids to school that are prepared to learn, why are we being graded on the fact that it's the parents and society that's letting them down? Are we becoming the scapegoats for this? I may make a question to go back is, what are we going to do with these teachers in these schools that are already failing now when they want to transfer out of there because they're not going to be graded on their kids' performance, though they're working very hard with them? And many of these teachers, you know, that's their life. They live to working with those kids. But they're not going to do that any longer if you're going to grade them down and you're going to put them on plans of improvement and it's detrimental to their career. Because this is where they look to work. What are we going to do with all those teachers? What are we going to do with those empty schools? That was my question.
And so I do like to do the devil's advocate now and again. So using your analogy, so we now have
a group of teachers, if you will, that are concerned with going elsewhere because they're going to be graded against them because they don't have that growth that in your school that you've got involved parents. So the other side of the coin would be that those teachers that are not getting that a plan for improvement, that coaching, that mentoring, in those low-performing schools, one would assume that there's some function, some way that they would welcome something that allows, because quite frankly, we can talk about parents not being involved, but at the end of the day, most of you folks in here are educators, and you know the only way for those students out is to become educated.
Right.
So we could discuss how poor the parents are and how poor the communities, but that doesn't advance this cause. And the cause being, how do we allow and how do we facilitate getting those kids getting at least the opportunity to get out of that mess? So
I agree.
The flip side is, what is it that we, I forget the term, the plan for improvement, employees, and my employees like that plan for improvement. They know where they are, they know where they may have made mistakes, they know what they have to do to improve it, they know that we have communicated with that plan, and they know where the next step is. So, I mean, I don't necessarily see that as a bad thing.
No, I agree. That's what I'm saying. We need to evaluate.
Right.
We have our fair share within this district, and I've run into several, that are teachers that need to be out. You know, that's a different issue altogether.
And in fairness, I'm not going to pick on teachers. I'm going to pick on every industry. That we have folks and we've all worked somewhere or we said, you know what, we're picking up the slack. We're pulling a ball and chain here and hey, that's not fair that I'm doing so-and-so's work. And, many employees complain about that and that happens industry-wide. So it certainly happens. You know, I don't want to pick on teachers necessarily, but every single one of you in your buildings, you know who they are. And from a parent's perspective, we knew who they were too. And I think that is the challenge that these teacher evaluations say, how do we pick out those folks that are better suited for other industries and they are not a good match? It doesn't necessarily mean that they're bad people. They're just not a good match. And as parents, we don't want our kids year after year after year with those teachers being on an improvement plan as our kids now can't lead. Now they're moving into the next. Nobody wants that. So how do we make, and I hear what you're saying, you have a profession that you want to be careful that we don't out those good teachers inadvertently. On the other side, we have parents or what we would say constituents or clients that are saying, you know, we have our kids and now we can't afford to waste a year.
I agree.
So somewhere in the middle is where we're at, and quite frankly, that's the reason we're having this conversation, because I think we all know something should be done. I think it's what, and I certainly commend the department for at least advancing it forward, that something needs to be done. Now, I think it would be great to have a conversation to see how they went about it, because I do think that you would be able to pick out 25, 26 years in your building, you think? You know who the folks are that could do a better job. And how we ask folks like you to come to the table and tell us how should we go about it. I mean, clearly you're passionate about what you do. You probably score very well in what you do. That is not a personal concern that you're having in regards to this. So with that 15, 20 minutes left, hopefully we'll get to hear from the department.
Thank you for your testimony. We really appreciate it. Okay, with that, we want to make sure that we only have this room for about 15 more minutes. I've been told that this clock is a bit slow on the wall here. So I want the opportunity for the Department of Education. We did print off for anyone to pick up the newly adopted educator evaluation regulations. And for any of you who do not know this, I'm assuming that you all know this, legislators do not write regulations. The boards write regulations based on statutes, okay? So that's very, and also departments write regulations based on statutes. We are the regulatory review committee. All that we can do is have hearings and listen at this time. Thank goodness there's a new law that is going to be signed on July 16th, which will give legislators, something I prime sponsored, that will give legislators about 10 days to weigh in on concerns with regulations. That's not being signed until July 16th, then it doesn't take effect, I believe, for 90 days. So unfortunately, right now, all we can do is listen, weigh in, hear, but I do want to give you guys the opportunity to read the regulations and the frequently asked questions and answers. Also, in this new law, you will be able to interact with the department when the regulations are actually being made. So we'll have to do a huge bill signing and answer a lot of questions and go into great detail in regards to that bill, House Bill 140, here in Eagle River on July 16th. And you all are welcome at the Chamber of Commerce. It'll be over lunch from about 11:30 to 1:30 on July 16th. I'm extremely excited about that. But with that, the Department of Education, thank you for your patience. Thank you for holding. I'm sure you guys are dying to talk, but I'm going to set a little bit of parameters where we would like to go with this conversation. From the research that we've been able to do in my office, there's approximately 42 states that have either adopted or in the process of developing a plan to revise teacher evaluations to align with the Common Core Initiative. There's a source called Moving Forward, a national perspective on state progress for the Common Core State Standards Implementation Planning in 2013 by Education First and Editorial Projects and Education, Inc. Basically, this new evaluation system, we gathered, a lot of the teachers were being evaluated the same. It was kind of just check off the box, about 95% from what we can gather, whether this is accurate information or not. Those that are in charge will have to explain if this is true or not, but a lot of the teachers were getting the same evaluations within their districts. And so I understand that the new standards needed to be looked at because it is required by law from 1996. A law governing teachers and administrative evaluations was passed in 1996, and you did need to look at that. With that, though, why now? Why these regulations? Is this part of the No Child Left Behind waiver? And what are your, in particular, feelings and input from the 800 comments, and how are you addressing all these concerns raised by teachers? So those are kind of with the 15 minutes left of where I would like you to go in regards to this. And with all these concerns, I'm sure you've written down the questions with the special need kids and the unfair because there are lower number of students in those classes. And so each student is going to have a higher impact. In regards to several people brought up, what about choir? What about, you know, PE and all these others that aren't going to be part of the standardized test? How are those teachers, or is it an unfair weighting with the English language arts and the math teachers at this time and potentially science down the road? So we definitely want you to answer that question. And we also want you to describe the differences between Common Core and Alaska State Standards. We also would like you to describe why 50%. I mean, who decided that number was a good number by, you know, within four years? Why 50% of the teachers' evaluation is going to be related to that, and how tied are we to this No Child Left Behind waiver, and how much wiggle room as a state in regards to the new testing, the AMP tests, which I learned about, how different are they from the SBAC and the PARC tests? I think those are very, very, very important questions that you can start with answering, but we certainly want to give you the rest of the time, Department of Education, that we have in this to go ahead and speak to us. So with that, Department of Education, please state clearly who's speaking and if you could help address our concerns.
Yeah, this is Les Morse, the Deputy Commissioner for the Alaska Department of Education and Early Development, and it looks like we might have about 13 minutes left. I'll try to address some of these issues, but I think there are a lot more issues that were put on the table unrelated to what this hearing was advertised for and what we were asked by your staff to come to speak about. So I'll try to address the things that we were asked to come speak about, address as many of the issues. But I do think it's important that I set the table a little bit by providing some background. First off, I want to be really clear when this process started, and I think that will help you understand a disconnect from any federal agenda. We go back, and then actually I want to make sure I also cover the regulation process, since this is the regulatory or the Administrative Procedures Regulatory Review Committee. So I will want to cover our process, and then if there's time remaining, I'll certainly respond to the questions that were raised. But
with all due respect, we'd like the questions, since there's 13 minutes left. We want the people who are here and have given their morning up, we would like those questions asked first.
Start with your question, which was why now. So the why now begins in 2008. And in 2008, Alaska brought together 400 stakeholders from across the state. And those stakeholders decided some key areas to develop an education plan. One of the key areas was teacher quality. So in 2009, the department put together a teacher quality working group. There were 37 people on the working group who were not department or school board, state school board members. Two of those were principals, one from the Principals Association, and three people from NEA. That group worked for a number of years, and in March 2012, they provided a report to the State Board of Education. That report really focused on a couple of things. Well, focused on a number of things, but things that the State Board then took action on starting in 2012 was around the purpose of the evaluation and trying to add more objectivity to the evaluation. And one concern that was raised was the issue of subjectivity when principals are evaluating. And that was really the goal here, is to bring in a more objective system. And so student learning was one of the particular areas they wanted to address. And in particular, this group of stakeholders said we should focus on student learning and not on student achievement. And I think that's an important distinction, because if we focused on student achievement, we would be focused on potentially just the test that's given. But it's very clear in our regulations that the board eventually adopted that this isn't focused on a single test based on any set of standards. This is on multiple measures that are designed locally with teachers engaged in the process. That's how that must occur based on the regulations. So to again, continue on why now, in June 2012, the board put out the regulations for public comment. Those regulations addressed the cultural standards being included in evaluation, purpose and scope of evaluation, reporting, and it also, of course, did include student learning data being included in evaluation. And when we put out that, they put that out for public comment, they decided that it should be an extended period of public comment. They should go beyond what normally a state department does. And so they kept it out for public comment for much longer. And if I might, I will let you know, on June 13th, 2012, the board put out for public comment this regulation, and they kept it up for public comment until November 2nd, 2012.
So with that, how many calls did you get? About 800, is that?
I think that's correct. I didn't recount them, but we just produced that for your office and gave that to you, so I believe you have all of that public comment.
That's the data that we can get.
That went out on June 13th. The public notice said, after the public comment period ends, the State Board of Education and Early Development will either adopt these or other provisions dealing with the same subject without further notice. I will note that the public comment that was all provided in writing was put in the State Board of Education packet that was put out for public comment, or put out for the public to see, including the public comment that did come in from the governor, which some of you have referenced. And that public comment did encourage the board to look at 50% of the evaluation being considered student data. And when you think about it, the main job of schools is to improve student learning. And so it makes sense that the state would say student learning should be part of evaluation. It almost seems counterintuitive that it hasn't been required to be that way. Some people said it should be 100%. However, the department felt strongly that observational information that you learn from teacher evaluation also ought to be included. The governor left it for the state board to determine how to get where they should get, but he did encourage them. And so the board took a gradual approach to implementation of those regulations. I also wanted to make it clear in this process and the why now, another important thing that occurred is we looked at public comment very carefully. Matter of fact, we got so much public comment early on that we reviewed quite carefully, which is among those 800 comments that the department brought and re-noticed the regulations at their October meeting, asked the state board to do that. That way we could show that we were responsive because there were common themes and there were at least 11 adjustments we made in the regulation in October, then re-noticed them even though those changes were not real significant and they still fell within the scope of the original
Deputy Commissioner, I'm going to ask you a quick question. I got a question from the audience. It says, after the comments, the 800 comments, how much did you change the regulations, and what were the trends that you saw in these 800 comments? And did you take action based on the input from the teachers across the state?
We did. There were 11 changes that we made, but there were also comments that were out of the scope, really, of what this regulation was doing. And you mentioned some of those earlier. There were concerns about data being collected, which isn't really an issue here. There was a lot of concerns about confidentiality, and the confidentiality of the teacher evaluation system was not at all affected by these regulations. And there's certainly actually some strong protections that remain in place about confidentiality that are in statute. So a good number of the comments actually were addressing issues that were not even in the notice reg changes. So that so some of them we simply couldn't respond to because it was outside the scope of the project. Then to go on, the state board did that adoption in December, and at that point we moved forward the regulations. Again, we're going back to December 2012. I want to be really clear then that the time frame that we gave and the support we've been providing for districts. But before I do that, let me just give you a little more clarity on what's required. This regulation requires that we use measures of student learning in teacher evaluation. It requires that there at least be two, up to four measures. It requires that the local districts develop those measures working with their teachers. It does not require every teacher in the district to be identically. So you might look at teachers in special education who just deal with special education students differently, because maybe the validity behind that would tell you that you need more data points because their numbers are simply too small. You might need other things. It also does not require the sole source of use the state assessments. That would be one, and so it could actually be one of four measures. It also doesn't prohibit, actually in the regulation itself, it really clearly says what a measure is if you look at 19.099. Measurement means assessment of student knowledge, understanding, or skill. It includes an assessment that is not a standardized test, so it could be a performance of a music performance, it could be performances of physical education, it could be a project that students do. But in terms of including the student learning, the time frame includes this next year of piloting. The districts are supposed to pilot a system that they have. By next summer, they are to bring to their local board the adoption, because a lot of the detailed decisions, which again, the regulation requires teachers are included in the process of developing this, that local decision of the local board, they must adopt a system by next summer. And then for the 15-16 year and the 16-17 year, 20% of the rating of the overall system would include student learning. By 17-18, it would be 35%, and then by 18-19, it would be 50%. So I know I just have a couple minutes. Let me be really clear in response to some of what I heard. We heard that testing experts should be consulted. They were. We heard that 50% just doesn't make sense without talking to those experts. We did talk to them. We heard that our standards, of which the test, which is only one quarter potentially of the student learning that would be evaluated, should be validated, and we should work with our university. We have, and we will continue to do so. We heard that our test is dubious. We don't think it is dubious. We think we've been very public about that. We heard that we should have tougher measures regarding the praxis. If you listen to the March and the June State Board meeting, you will hear that the State Board is also concerned about that. We heard that Alaska content knowledge isn't important to our teachers. It's in, if you look at 04200, standard 4 is about content knowledge. We have 8 standards for teachers, and one of them is on content knowledge. We heard that it wasn't a priority. All 8 are a priority. We also heard concerns that there is subjectivity in the process of evaluation. This work is actually about removing the subjectivity. We heard a concern about this being limited to a written assessment. That isn't true. It can be a performance. We heard this is supposed to be punitive. It isn't the department's objective to make this punitive. It's actually about improving learning in schools, improving achievement, and actually helping teachers perform better. And I know from my own experience of 11 years in the classroom, 28 years in the profession, that I was better when I got feedback than I was without it. We heard that there was concerns about data. We haven't suggested any data that we would collect that isn't already collected and now can be utilized to help teachers perform better and help students to learn more. We heard that principals should have been more engaged, and as I said at the beginning, they were engaged from 2009 forward. We heard concerns about gifted versus special education, and because you design this locally, you take into account those kinds of issues, and I taught both populations, and it is harder to move achievement of really high achievers, but we should never make an excuse that they can't yet learn more. And the same should be true of our lowest performing students, regardless of why they are low performing. This whole system is about moving them forward. And I would say we were very deliberate in including more than standardized tests. Again, it's looking at local performance. And I heard somebody say that issues that would lead me to believe that maybe we could attract more teachers into special education because you could move the needle at that level and their performance would be rated higher. And wouldn't that be great if more people wanted to go to special education? And so that's my quick run through of the comments I heard. I am a little shorter than I thought. I didn't realize Ms. Stolsky would have 45 minutes and I would only have 10, but I think I've tried to cover things as quickly as I could and touch on each item.
With that, we do thank you, and in regard to what you were asked to talk about, a lot of this was follow-up from a previous hearing. We're still going to have ongoing hearing in regards to this. We do appreciate you listening. I know there's still concerns and unanswered questions, and is there a person at the department that you could recommend people send their questions to at this time?
If people have questions, they can always contact me and then or Marcy Herman, our ledge liaison, and then between the two of us, we'll figure out who is the most appropriate person to respond to those questions and get back to people. And if the committee has questions, we can work on that. We are doing, I would say we're doing a lot of work preparing to help our districts right now move these systems forward and responding to their work, so we'll have to do it within the balance of all those needs to actually make sure we are successful in the work that we put forward.
Okay, and I do have one question. Are these regulations a requirement of the No Child Left Behind waiver?
These regulations were moved forward starting in 2008, and then in 2012 they were adopted well before the waiver became part of the process in Alaska. So they preceded the waiver.
Okay, so you're saying no, these regulations are not required as part of the No Child Left Behind waiver.
Because we have the system in place by choice of Alaska, we were able to meet the requirement around evaluation of the waiver. But what I want to be clear of is we have a system that allowed us to apply for a waiver, but we did not build a system in response to applying for a waiver.
Okay, so if the question, are these regulations a requirement of the No Child Left Behind waiver, would that be a yes or a no?
I think I already answered that.
In a roundabout way, from what I can tell, the answer is...
We didn't pass these as a requirement of the waiver.
But does the No Child Left Behind waiver require this?
The No Child Left Behind waiver requires that you use student learning and evaluating teachers, which Alaska had in place when we applied the waiver by Alaska Choice.
Okay. And just to close, is this new teacher evaluation system similar to the evaluation system in states that have fully adopted the Common Core initiative?
I can't speak for other states. There may be some national organizations that could do that, but we focused on Alaska here.
Okay, with that, we do want to thank you for coming. We will have additional hearings, and we definitely do appreciate the Department of Education being online, all those who testified, the speakers, and we really do want to thank you for allowing the opportunity for teachers to express their concerns. And we will be in contact with you. So with that, thank you very much. And we will adjourn the meeting at 10 o'clock.